Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th Annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
The choice to have or not have children is one of the biggest decisions that you can make in your life. We're going to talk about the child-free choice, from its history to stereotypes and stigmas, and what this cultural shift means to our future. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our next guest is Amy Blackstone. She is a professor in sociology and the Margaret Chase Smith Policy Center at the University of Maine. Her new book is Child Free by Choice, The Movement Redefining Family and Creating a New Age of Independence. She's also the co-creator of the blog, We're Not Having a Baby. Have you or someone you know decided not to have kids? What's that experience been like? How do you think that society looks at people who don't have children? Join in the conversation, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Are you there, Amy?
I am.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Where are you coming to us from?
From Bangor, Maine.
Bangor, Maine. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Great time to be up there.
Beautiful day in Maine. Yes,
totally.
It is.
So where did you come up with the term child-free? Is that yours or did someone else coin that first?
It is not my term. It's been around since, probably since the 80s, actually,
okay.
When social scientists started studying this choice to not have children in the early 70s. And at that time, everybody talked about people who didn't have kids as childless, which
mm-hmm.
makes sense. They didn't have kids.
Right.
But as people became more vocal about their choice to opt out of parenthood, they also became vocal about the idea that the term childless didn't really feel like it fit because it emphasized the thing that was missing. And in the case of people who've made the choice not to have kids, it really is a positive choice. And so child-free started being used both by folks in the movement, so to speak, folks who wanted to raise awareness about this choice, and also by academics who were studying it and wanted to distinguish the experience of not having children by choice from not having children as a circumstance that one doesn't want.
Right. Because there could be some negative terms with both of them, right?
Right. I mean, I think there is some stigma associated with both terms.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the controversies, I guess, in the child-free movement is whether child-free overemphasizes one's
I was wondering, yeah.
Children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I do use it, but I, as I say in the book, I use it good-naturedly, and I hope that people will take it in that way.
Right.
I certainly, in my use of it, don't mean to imply that the world should be free of children, but it is a positive take on this identity that some people have chosen.
Mm-hmm. And you do take a look at this in a lot of different ways. It's sometimes lighthearted and sometimes very serious, but I think you really bring in a lot of different viewpoints, which is great. Now, this all kind of started with a blog, right?
It did,
mm-hmm.
yes. My husband and I have been blogging at We're Not Having a Baby since 2013. And actually, prior to that, I've been doing this research. I'm a sociologist for about 11 years. I started the work in 2008. And in 2013, when we launched the blog, it sort of had two purposes. One, my husband Lance and I were looking for a community of people like ourselves, people who'd made the choice not to have kids. And we live in a small town, a rural state, and our friends are parentful. We wanted friends who shared our experience. So decided creating a virtual community was a good idea since we were having trouble finding folks right in our town. And then I also really was looking for a way to share findings from my research about this topic in a way that would be accessible to a broader and more diverse audience than folks like myself who read the the scholarly journals.
Right. Yes. Yeah, it's nice to get that information out there. We do have a couple of calls, Amy, so I think I'm going to take a few of them right now. The first one is Veronica, and she's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Veronica. Are you with us, Veronica?
This is Veronica. Hello,
yes,
how are
you? Yes, hi. Good, good. What did you want to comment about this?
Well, just an experience that might be slightly different than that. Sometimes circumstances in life, economy, situations cause a person not to make the choice to have children. Maybe they wanted to, but they didn't feel right about it, given circumstances, maybe not the right person. And we find ourselves, you know, past the time where you can have children, having never had them, but maybe that wasn't our choice.
Mm-hmm. And right. Did you come across that, Amy, with some of the readers of your blog?
I did, yes. And that is definitely, I think that's where this distinction in terminology becomes important. In my own research, I focused pretty narrowly on people who've made the choice, who say that this is a choice I've made. But yeah, there is a segment of the population. Some studies show that about half of people without kids are childless by circumstance, and the other half have chosen that circumstance. So it's a reality that for some people, there are circumstances that prevent them from having kids, when really the choice they would have made would be to have them. And I think, as the caller indicated, even people who maybe would have preferred to have kids and couldn't or didn't, many of them do come to accept their circumstances and live very full and fulfilling lives.
Right. I guess I, as myself personally, I can relate to that, where wanted to have kids, it just never happened, but I'm not too upset about it at this point. You know, it's just the way your life turned out. So, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you, Veronica. I appreciate that comment. And then let's go to Gary in Ripon. Hi, Gary.
Yes, good morning. I guess I never had children, mostly because I bought into the idea that you should live the life that you want the world to be. And I think life would be better if there were fewer children or fewer people, not more people. And obviously you don't make fewer people by having children.
Okay, well, thank you for that comment, Gary. Amy, you talk about that a little bit in your book too, don't you?
I do, yeah. That's a pretty common reason, and increasingly more common, I would say, over the last 5 to 10 years, that people are looking at the world, looking at the consequences of overpopulation, and particularly the consequences on our environment, and are opting out for that reason, that they recognize or believe that we have an overpopulation problem and choose not to have children for that reason.
Sure. Now, in the book, you do a really deep dive into, you know, historical, cultural context of, you know, not becoming a parent. Why did you think that was really important to put in the book?
Well, I think one of the reasons that it's important to look at the history is to understand that while we may be only just beginning to talk about parenthood as a choice, the reality is that people have been opting out of parenthood for as long as we've had people.
Sure.
But the ways that people have done it and the ways that we talk about it have changed. So if you think about nuns and priests, those are people who have always opted out of becoming parents, and those are socially sanctioned ways of opting out of parenthood. Also, while birth control and abortion have only been around and legal for a historically short period of time, people have been preventing pregnancy or childbirth for a very long time. So these are all these are questions. Whether or not to become a parent is a question that people have grappled with for as long as we've had people, but we just have only begun to really talk about parenthood as a choice, and I think it's new that we're having these conversations.
So looking at some of those, and maybe go back to, was it 1971 or 72 when that controversial book came out? Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. A woman by the name of Ellen Peck wrote a book called The Baby Trap, and forgive me, I'm blanking on the exact year. It was either 71 or 72. Yeah,
it was the early 70s.
Early 70s, yeah. Yes. And she was a woman who herself opted out of parenthood and wanted to raise awareness about the idea that parenthood is a choice. So wrote a book called The Baby Trap, where she, you know, in some ways her language and her argument sounded very feminist. She wanted women to be able to make the choice that was right for them, and supported women's right to abortion and to birth control. She also had some rather controversial arguments about the impact of parenthood on marriage, and that argued that women who had children were no longer would no longer be attractive to their husbands. So it wasn't all positive and sunshine and roses, but sure. it certainly did cause a splash, and caused people to begin talking, I think, more publicly about parenthood as a choice. She went on the Johnny Carson show. She was in the New York Times. So it certainly got a lot of press. And one result of that book was the creation of an organization called the National Organization for Non-Parents, which Ellen Peck was involved in helping to found. But some of her co-founders were actually parents who wanted everybody to be more deliberate about the choice that they make about parenthood. So the National Organization for Non-Parents, the mission really was to get people to understand that parenthood is a choice, that people can choose to opt in or opt out, and also to raise awareness about the reality that life can be meaningful and fulfilling for those who opt out of it.
Right. And we do have some more phone calls. So let's go to Maddie in De Pere. Hi, Maddie.
Hello. I never thought I would do this, but I actually told my three healthy grandsons that I wish they would adopt children and not produce children of their own. I see these signs all over foster parents needed, and a lot of those people are never going to get their act together so they can raise their own children. And I think that's a responsible thing to do, is to raise those children.
Okay. Well, thank you, Maddie. Appreciate that comment. Amy, do you have anything to comment about that yourself?
Yes. That's actually something I heard quite a lot in my interviews with child-free people. And though I was talking with folks who ultimately decided not to rear children, either, you know, by having their own or by adopting, a quarter of the women and men that I interviewed actually chose careers that required them to be involved in helping to rear the next generation. So they were teachers or pediatricians, social workers, counselors. I talked with a career camp director. And those folks had a similar set of ideas, that there are many children in the world who need caring and loving adults in their lives who aren't their biological parents. And in the case of the folks that I interviewed, they decided that, you know, dedicating themselves to a career that would make a difference in children's lives was the way that they would do that.
Sure.
You know, of course, for some folks, it's adoption or foster care, but in this case, it was through their careers.
Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of myths out there, and maybe not quite so much as it used to be, that people who don't have kids don't like kids. And that's definitely not true, is it?
Right. No. Like I said, I mean, 25% of the people I interviewed actually spend their careers with kids. And even those who don't have careers focused on kids' lives talked about the roles that they play in many children's lives, either their nieces and nephews' lives or as mentors to children through organizations like Big Brother, Big Sister. Many of them are close with the children of their friends. So, that's definitely a myth.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Amy Blackstone. Her new book is called Child Free by Choice, The Movement Redefining Family and Creating a New Age of Independence. Have you decided you don't want to have children? What's the reaction been? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. But stay with us, because we will be right back after this look at the news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR.
We'll be right back.
We're talking about the choice to forego parenthood with our guest today. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for the vacationing Larry Mueller. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Amy Blackstone is a professor in sociology and the Margaret Chase Smith Policy Center at the University of Maine. And we're talking with her about her new book, Child Free by Choice. Her work has been published in a variety of peer-reviewed journals, and her research has been featured in various media outlets, including the New York Times. Have you tackled the choice to not to have or not have children? What does the term family mean to you? We want to hear from you, so give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Amy, let's go right back to the phones because we have Bill in Waukesha who has something he wanted to share with us. Hi, Bill.
Hello. comment I have or experience regards about 4 or 5 years ago, I was working with somebody who, when he found out that we did not have children and had opted out, he was actually offended and seemed to take the stance that, well, we actually committed a crime by not having children. It's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you, Bill. Amy, that's not the first time you've heard that, is it?
No, unfortunately, it is not. I think that, well, actually, I would say I know that things have gotten better in the last 40 years. Certainly, the stigma has gone down, but I do hear stories from people today about the pushback that they get and how it does offend some people with that others of us opt out of parenthood. I think in some ways, maybe giving everyone the benefit of the doubt, maybe it's less that it's offensive, but that it has never occurred to some people that parenthood is a choice. Mm-hmm. So it can be shocking, I think, to hear it for the first time. And I've certainly had my share of experiences talking with people who are simply dumbfounded when they find out that I don't have children and that it was a choice that I made. But I think that the more that we talk about this, the less likely it is that we'll have.
Sure. Yeah, I thought it was interesting, the story you told about being at a party and some woman was asking you basically, you know, how many kids you have or whatever, and you say you don't have any. And she just turned around and walked away from you.
She did, yes. I mean, I think that was a great example of I, you know, in the moment, I was hurt and humiliated, but after giving it some thought, I realized, you know, she probably truly had no idea what to say to me in response.
Sure.
But
yeah, you just never know. You got to be ready for anything, right?
Right.
Okay, let's go to Sharon, and she's in Superior. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that I knew when I was just a child at 12 years old, I did not want to have children. My reasons were many and varied, from the fact that I had a difficult childhood. There was just no desire whatsoever to have a child. And when people ask me if I have children, I flat out tell them, no, and I chose not to. I have no desire to have children. And I was widowed very young, so that was kind of a blessing in disguise as well. But my husband was on board with it. He never pressed the issue. We had a wonderful marriage, and I define family as my cat and dog. Me, the mm-hmm. cat, and the dog.
Sure.
No one has ever really made me feel like I've offended someone. Never. I laid it right out there, and that was that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, great. Thank you so much for that, Sharon. So, Amy, lots of things to talk about there, but
yeah.
One of the things she's talking about is family, and you get into that,
right.
Too.
I do, yeah. This happens to be my own personal soapbox issue as well.
Yeah.
So I do talk about family in the book, and I love hearing that she defines her family as herself and her partner and her pets. That's not unusual at all. And I think that the idea that family is something that we can create without children, again, this is another new idea for people. We tend to think of creating a family or as starting a family as happening once we have kids. But the reality is that people
who don't have children, form connections with each other, nurture those relationships, provide a household for each other, provide economically for one another. So they do all the same kinds of things that families that include children do. I guess the one thing that they don't do is reproduce. But one thing that I argue in the book is that if we think about reproduction more broadly, sociologists talk about two forms of reproduction. One is biological, and of course, child-free people don't do that. But the other is social reproduction, and that is playing roles in children's lives that help prepare them to become contributing members of society. So anything that people do to teach children our values, our norms, to care for them, all of that counts as social reproduction. So the folks I've already talked about who I interviewed who have jobs that involve children's lives certainly engage in social reproduction. I spoke with many child-free people who have nieces and nephews in their lives that they care for on weekends, that they support financially even. Certainly that counts as social reproduction. So even that reproduction piece is one that we fulfill in some ways.
That kind of goes back to the it takes a village type of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, next up we have Sarah, and she's calling from Madison. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So I actually do have a child. I have one son, and I had him at 38 years old. I am 40 now, and he is going to be 2 this summer. And I'm getting a lot of pressure from family members and even friends about having another child when I don't know that I want to have another child yet. I mean, I will be 41 if I do have another child. And I'm both my husband and I are busy working professionals, and we spend a lot of time with our son. We love him so much. You know, and we do want to give him a sibling, but I feel a lot of pressure to reproduce more, and getting stereotypical advice about, like, you know, only child syndrome and stuff like that.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Amy, that comes up with a lot of people who have one child, doesn't it?
Yes. This is actually something I learned in the course of doing this work, how much we who have opted out of parenthood entirely have in common with the experiences of parents of onlys. I had the chance to meet the writer and journalist Lauren Sandler, who's the author of the book One and Only, when we shared the stage on the Katie Kirk Show a few years ago, talking about this very topic. And I learned from Lauren that just as child-free people are told, oh, you're selfish, you don't care about the world or the future, your family's not full or real, many times parents have only hear the same kinds of things, although the added thing that they have is the pressure to provide a sibling for their kid. So one of the things I love about Lauren Sandler's work is she sort of picks apart all of the myths that we have about only children and parents of only children. And the big takeaway from her book is that only children fare just fine. They're not any worse off than other kids. So
so relax. It's cool. Well, and another thing, I mean, sometimes we see people who have more than 2 kids and they get criticized for having too many children. Why do people think it's any of their business?
Well, that is the... if I could answer that question, I think I would be a millionaire.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know why, other than we are reared with this idea of the ideal family. And the ideal family, I think, in the United States is that, you know, 2 parents, each of them a different sex, one child of each sex, and maybe a dog and a cat and a white picket fence. Mm-hmm. And because that's the ideal that's held up in our popular culture, although I would say that's changing, you know, anything that pushes against that, that challenges it or is different from that can be hard for people to take.
Sure. And let's talk to Rosie, because in Ashland, looks like she has something similar went on in the 70s. Hi, Rosie.
Hi. I was pregnant with my 3rd child in 72 and was made to be ashamed for having more than replacement offspring. And she was conceived on an IUD, so I was trying not to, but I was still made to be very ashamed.
Oh, isn't that crazy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that timing really aligns with the growth of the zero population mm-hmm. growth movement, which I think, was an important movement in terms of raising awareness about the environmental consequences of overpopulation. But I guess what we've just heard is that there are sometimes unintended consequences, too, where people are stigmatized for any variety of circumstances.
Right, right. Thank you, Rosie. Next up is Stan, and he's calling from Green Bay. He has a comment for us. Hi, Stan.
Yeah, hi. Interesting topic. I was just interested in your guest comment on the wealthier the country, the lower the birth rate, and the poorer the country, the higher the birth rate. And you would think it would be the opposite. You know, you'd think if you were struggling to get by, you'd choose to have no kids or one kid. And I'd just like your guest to comment on that.
Amy?
Sure. Yeah. So as you said, the fertility rate really does vary from country to country. It is linked to wealth. It's also linked to access for women to education, into the workforce. And so I think what I would argue is that as we see women have more agency, more control over their own lives and the course of their lives, we see that they either opt out of parenthood or they have fewer children. That is a reality. I think wealth is part of it, but I would say it's more connected to education and access to the workforce.
Okay. Thank you, Stan. I appreciate that comment. Next, we've got Anne in Racine. Hi, Anne.
Hi there. A great show, great topic.
Thank you.
I get really tired of the pushback, and like the gentleman earlier that his coworker was actually offended. I got a lot of that. And when I got married, my husband and I were both of the mind not to have children. So we both got tired of it. So what we would do is when people said, well, why don't you have children, or when are you going to have children, we would simply look very sad and say, well, we can't. And that shut people up. Mm. And we didn't then further explain that the reason that we couldn't was because we had a vasectomy. So it was not actually a lie, but it really stopped people from commanding.
Sometimes humor can really help.
Yes.
Thanks, Anne. Thank you. Next up, we've got Holly, and she's calling from Ogama.
Ogama, Wisconsin.
Ogama. Okay. Sorry about that, yeah. Holly. You know, every once in a while, one sneaks in I've never heard of before.
That's okay. No, listening to everybody's responses was rather cathartic for me, because back in the 70s, the guilt trip, being told I was selfish and all these other things. And my reply always was, you have children for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons. There's too many parents that shouldn't be parents. And I felt quite strongly that I had done the right thing, and mm-hmm. At age 65, I'm tired of the guilt trip. And you know what? I'm standing on my own two feet, and I'm doing fine.
Sure. Well, thank you, Holly, and for being so strong way back then. Amy, it's got to be easier for people to make that decision now than at that time, like when Holly did.
Yeah, I think that it is. But I'd love hearing stories like Holly's, so
yeah.
Much that she called in. There is a woman who is pretty active in child-free communities today by the name of Marcia Drett Davis, who is in her 70s today. And she shares an experience of coming out as child-free in her early 30s. And she actually ended up sharing her story on 60 Minutes. She and her husband broke the news to her in-laws on that show in the 70s that they were not planning to have kids. And she received so much backlash. She was working as a substitute teacher at the time and couldn't get jobs. She had people sending her threatening letters. And, you know, I have to say, I've done a few of these types of interviews myself, and uh-huh. never have I received the kind of threatening responses that Marcia received in the 70s. So, yeah, it's a different world today.
Yes, sure. It is. And, well, and you explain in your book, too, that she wasn't treated very well, she and her husband, by the 60 Minutes crew as far as how she came across. So that didn't help either. But
Right.
We did get an email from Paige, and she's in Appleton. She's wondering what advice you have for young couples trying to make this decision. She says a million reasons come to mind when she thinks about it, ranging from climate change to student loans, or maybe she just doesn't know if she wants to. So what would you advise her?
Well, I'm a researcher, so I would say do your research. Talk to people. Talk to people in your life who have made the choice not to have children. If you don't know folks like that, there are resources. I'll do a plug for my own book.
I was going to say. All
kinds of other blogs out there, communities online. And talk to folks that you know and respect who have opted into parenthood as well. I think it's the best decision is an informed decision. So I think talking to folks in both circumstances makes a lot of sense.
Sure. And just to let everyone know, our guest is Amy Blackstone, and her book is called Child Free by Choice, The Movement Redefined Family and Refining Family and Creating a New Age of Independence. And you can find that at your friendly neighborhood bookstore or online, I'm sure. So let's go back to the phones here. We've got Ron in Madison calling. Hi, Ron.
Rebuttal to something earlier.
Sure.
Many millions of child-free adults do care very much about planet Earth, and for a large number of us, that is a major motivation, trying to reduce the destruction of our home planet, Earth. The main thing I wanted to talk about was usually within months or years of meeting me, people who I've hung out with eventually learned that I was the fourth of 12 siblings, children. And so eventually some of them asked, well, how many children do you want to have? Okay, the first time I recall that was in the early 70s. A fellow college student asked that. And I had no answer. I mean, and I thought about it for months and months and never had an answer. Much later, mid-90s, a coworker asked how many children I wanted to have, and I quickly put it into words. Planet Earth has 1 to 2 billion young humans. I don't need to add any more. If there were only 1 to 2 million children on the planet, then it would be important that I also try to produce more children to keep the species alive. But it's never been necessary during my lifetime that I have to procreate to keep the species alive, because we're way overpopulated for what the planet can handle.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Amy?
Yeah, that's not an uncommon perspective. I certainly heard that from many of the folks that I interviewed. And, we are gaining people by the second. We don't have a problem in terms of repopulating our species. The problem is more on the other side, that we might want to think about slowing that down a little bit.
Sure. In your book, you talk about child free being a kind of gendered, uniquely feminine experience. What do you mean by that?
Well, so one of the things that I learned from interviewing both child-free women and men, and also from having Lance, my husband, and I really think very critically about our own experience as a child-free couple, was that the women I spoke with, at least, were more likely to experience pushback from people, shock when they shared that they were child-free. I actually spoke with a number of men who said, you know, when I talk to my friends about the fact that I don't have kids or don't want kids, it's almost as if I get a pat on the back, like I dodged a bullet or something. And for women, it's either pity or hostility. And so, I mean, I think this is linked to the fact that we imagine that for women, motherhood really is at the core of who we are, and we don't think of fatherhood in the same way. And so because we really intertwine womanhood and motherhood in our minds, I think it can be difficult for people to realize, oh, you can be a woman and not be a mother. Those
right.
things can be true at the same time.
Well, the whole maternal instinct thing, I mean, that's kind of a myth that we've grown over the years, isn't it?
Yes, it is. At least to date, we don't have any scientific evidence to show that women are driven to become mothers. That doesn't mean that we don't have an innate drive to have sex, but the that's different from being driven to rear a human for 18 years.
Right.
And we tell ourselves that women are naturally inclined to rear children, but really it's something that is learned.
Sure, absolutely. I thought it was interesting that you had a chapter in the book from your husband and his perspective. Why don't you tell us a little bit about his experiences?
Sure, yeah. So because Lance and I have really been a team from the beginning with this project, we started the blog together and we both contribute to the blog. We thought it would be important for him to contribute to the book as well. And also, we hear less often men's experiences of being child-free. So Lance wrote an afterword for the book to describe his own experience and then some of the things that differed for him from me and some of the aspects of his experience that might be unique to men. So one of the things that he sometimes gets asked about is his legacy. You know, who will carry on the family name,
right.
who will carry on his legacy. He happens to be one of five children, but the only boy in the family. So that is a question that has come up for him. And it's not something that he ever really personally struggled with, but mm-hmm. he raises that in the afterword. It's something that men face. And for him also, the shift in friendship after
sure.
His close friends became fathers was much different and almost harder, I think, for women because we are socialized.
Amy, I hate to cut you off. I hate to cut you off, but we really have to get going. Thank you so much for being with us. Our guest is Amy Blackstone.
Welcome.
Her book is Child Free by Choice. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.